It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Legislative Monday with Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell. Hi, Joyce. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
The year is 1931. The location is Spencer in northwest Iowa. A boy drops a lit sparkler in a drugstore fireworks display. The resulting blaze destroys nearly five blocks of Spencer's main business district and all 25 buildings lost, more than 50 damaged. It's one of two devastating fires back at the start of the 20th century that led to Iowa's current fireworks laws. Now, nationally, 43 states allow some sort or all consumer fireworks. Iowa is among four states that allow only sparklers or these novelty fireworks, such as snakes. And three states have blanket bans on consumer fireworks. Joyce, this has a bit of a history at the Iowa State House. I understand a few days ago the Iowa Senate brought it up again, voted 5-0 to revive some legislation to permit retail sale of fireworks, such as firecrackers, these Roman candles, bottle rockets, these sorts of things, right?
It passed the Senate State Government Committee on its way to now a vote in the full House. The House passed similar legislation last year. The bill that passed the Senate committee, it has never been before the full House in the Senate, but the bill that passed the Senate committee was amended to make it a little bit harder for communities would have to opt in and take a specific vote to have fireworks instead of the other way around, where a city could opt out of fireworks.
Okay, so a little different approach this year. Let's hear from a backer of the bill. Senator Jake Chapman is with you at the State House Law Library, a Republican from Adel. Senator Chapman, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
You support the legalization of these commercial fireworks? Should we be selling them like the other states that I mentioned here? Why?
Yeah, you know, really this issue has come before us over the last few years, and this is an issue for me about personal freedom, and it's a matter of whether or not we're going to trust Iowans, as has 44 other states, 43, several others looking at legalizing as well. And so it really is a fundamental issue. We have our current law allows Iowans to possess as many fireworks as they want, but yet they can't display those fireworks. That kind of legislation would be the same as saying you can own a barbecue grill, but you can never cook on that grill. It's a silly law. And so what we're trying to do is modernize, and we're looking to other states, what other states have done in being responsible and promoting education with the legalization.
Mm-hmm. You say this is for freedom, but of course we have many laws that are that restrict our freedom, buckling up in your car, for instance, in the interest of safety. Here, too, injuries are a chief concern, as well as just fireworks being a nuisance. What do you say to the claim that we'll just increase some of the injuries, especially the kids losing fingers, eyes, and so forth?
Well, I think when you deal with an issue like this, it brings emotions out on both sides of the issue. And so what we have to deal with is the facts. So what are the facts? Well, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which is a federal agency, looks at different types of products that have associated risk with them. One of them is fireworks. And no one will tell you that there's not an associated risk with fireworks. Certainly there are. There's associated risk with riding an ATV. There's associated risk with shooting firearms. There's a lot of risk. And so what our responsibility is as legislators is to determine whether or not the public should be able to utilize these recreational activities. When there's pundits who say, hey, we can't have fireworks because there's innate danger with it, people could be hurt, look, the number one cause of injuries within the fireworks report is sparklers, something we already have legal right now. In fact, for those ages 5 and under, 61% of those injuries are caused from sparklers.
Is that nationwide or just statewide?
That's nationwide.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nationwide, last year there were 11 fatalities. When you look at those fatalities, a large number of those fatalities were from homemade illegal fireworks, mm-hmm. not from consumer-grade fireworks, not the type of fireworks we're talking about now. And I think there's a big misconception out there that we're going to be legalizing M80s and cherry bombs.
Those are a different class of fireworks that would not be included.
Absolutely.
That right?
Those were federally prohibited years ago. For example, an M80 would have had 3 grams of pyrotechnic flash powder. Currently, the max you can have in a firecracker is 0.05 grams. So there have been substantial reductions in injuries. In fact, if we go back to 1976 and look from 1976 to current, injuries have decreased 700%. Or 89%, but yet consumption has increased 700%.
Okay.
So consumption has gone up 700%, yet reduction in injuries by 89%.
I understand the other prong of your pitch here, or your argument here, too, is economic development. We're having a lot of, goods sold here, fireworks sold actually in Missouri or neighboring states that could be generating some revenue here in Iowa.
Absolutely. You know, I would say the number one opponent of this bill are fireworks shops right across the border in Missouri. And, of course, they have a financial interest in making sure Iowa doesn't legalize fireworks. Again, I'm not doing this because of wanting to increase tax revenue, although that's a byproduct of us legalizing fireworks. And I think we take a responsible approach as well with what do we do with that increased revenue. Part of it in part goes to grants that would be given back to local fire departments and EMS to promote safe handling of fireworks. That's what we've seen in places like Indiana that has reduced the number of injuries in their state. They have actually promoted education. And right now, look, if you were to call up a fire department and say, hey, what's the safe process of lighting off these fireworks? They would simply have to tell you they're illegal in this state. And even though we all know full well, wink, wink, everyone is shooting them off.
Right.
And so, you know, let's take a responsible approach and let's promote the education.
Okay. Senator Jake Chapman, we have a lot of other voices. We get the gist of what you're saying here. We want to reach out to our listeners because we have so many voices in this half hour. Please go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page and give us a line or two about your view on whether, we should permit the retail sale of consumer fireworks, firecrackers, Roman candles, and bottle rockets here in Iowa. Are you convinced by the arguments that Senator Chapman just put forth? We're on Facebook. Iowa Public Radio is on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk, or write us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. And let's talk with Nathan Irvin. He is a owner of 2 fireworks places, a manager of Hale's Fireworks. This is welcome to the program, Nathan.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're located in Missouri, but right on the Iowa border, that's right?
Yes, we are just south of the border.
Okay, so Senator Chapman says you're going to be against this. Are you against it? It would cut into your bottom line. How much?
It will. It will probably initially it will maybe cut it by as much as a quarter, but in the long term, I don't think it'll matter as much. And really, I'm not opposed to it. I kind of see Iowa as sort of a growth market.
Mm-hmm. How much business do you get from Iowans, say, in the season when it starts to warm up as we approach the 4th of July and so forth?
I would say that probably over half of our business is from Iowa.
Can you give me a number of Iowans who will come into any one store, say, in the month of June, July?
I mean, I think that just about everybody in Iowa is probably going to come in.
Oh, all 3 million of us. All right.
Absolutely. No, I would say that it is in probably just in the 20 days of our actual season, which goes from June 20th to July 10th, there's probably as many as a few thousand, really.
Mm, okay. And so people drive across the border, they get their fireworks and head back north.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's also include in our discussion here Asher Heimerman, joining us by phone, superintendent of Wisconsin Public Safety. This is not a state agency. It's an independent nonprofit agency dedicated to documenting public safety concerns, events, and departments in Wisconsin, not the Department of Public Safety there. Asher, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I understand that you are also chief photographer of incident response as well as superintendent of Wisconsin Public Safety. Now, your bearing on this is that you hear about fireworks injuries there in Wisconsin?
Yeah, in where I live in Sheboygan County, which is about an hour north of Milwaukee and then about an hour south of Green Bay, we don't typically see too many injuries, but we do have a lot of concerns with the launching of fireworks due to various ordinances locally here in the villages and cities that take up a lot of time with our officers responding to such complaints.
Okay, so first to the injuries, and then I want to have you address the nuisance aspect of this. Okay. So common types of injuries that happen, how serious are they? How many are they?
The most typical injury we see are the burns due to sparklers. We don't see too many serious injuries in our area. We just don't see them. We may see one or two more serious injuries, but they're located more to the north and west of Wisconsin in those parts.
And Wisconsin's laws are such that you can buy any time of year all kinds of consumer fireworks, such as firecrackers, bottle rockets, and Roman candles?
Yeah, the what is permitted is sparklers, similar fountains, cone fountains, snakes, and small smoke devices. But what is not allowed would be firecrackers, wheels, skyrockets, Roman candles are banned, and bombs, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have a little bit of audio from Senator Matt McCoy on this topic, but to you first, to Asher, can you say anything about the nuisance argument that is raised here? How many complaints do you have about people shooting off fireworks at times that really bothers other people? Tom, one of our listeners right now in Mason City near Clear Lake, he says he lives out in the country and they already have a problem with fireworks, 8 o'clock to 1 in the morning. He's worried about his pets that are disturbed by fireworks as well as endangered species.
Yeah, typically right around the 4th of July, local law enforcement agencies start responding to phone calls of shots fired. People who think they're hearing gunfire, but it's really either firecrackers or the fireworks. And it varies. The workload really picks up about 2 weeks before the 4th of July and about a week after the 4th of July. But the problem is really a year-long problem, typically starting in late spring and goes until a little bit before school starts in September.
And if you have a pet that is sensitive to this, you know about it because I have a dog, yep. For instance, around the 4th of July. My poor dog just hides in the basement when yep. anything goes off, and some dogs are...
And not only are the animals affected, but, veterans who served in combat are also affected with PTSD. So
yes, and we were looking to have a guest on. It doesn't look like he'll make it, who is arguing exactly that point on behalf of the veterans. Let's listen to this bit of tape. Senator Matt McCoy, a Democrat from Des Moines, he says making commercial fireworks legal to the public would be a nuisance to many Iowans, especially those in urban areas. And during a Senate committee meeting last week, McCoy successfully tacked a provision onto the bill which calls for having cities and counties opt in, this is what you were talking about, Joyce, a difference from the last year, to allowing fireworks within their borders. Let's listen to Senator McCoy.
You are creating a state law allowing for the sale and the use of these novelties, fireworks, that will go off between 9 a.m. and 10 p.m., 365 days a year, except on the holidays when you can blow them off virtually any time you want. You know, we live in neighborhoods. I'm sorry, we don't all have 14 acres between us and our neighbor. Sometimes we have 14 feet. Sometimes, in some cases, we have 14 inches. The fact is, this is a bad piece of legislation, and this amendment allows communities that are different than your community to take an affirmative action to allow something to happen based upon what is considered appropriate by elected officials at the local level. I always hear Republicans yelling about local control. Give them the local control. Give me local control. I don't want to smell those pigs. Well, this is giving them local control.
Okay. Senator Jake Chapman, we listened to some recorded bit of Senator Matt McCoy here. This changed. So your community has to opt in if you want this to happen, right? And you're okay with that?
I'm not okay with that. I think, first of all, let's step back a little bit. His amendment does – he claims it's local control. This is not local control. It's far from local control. In fact, I'm reading the amendment right here, and it says that a city council may authorize the use of such devices only if the county in which the city is located has also authorized the use of such device. So what this is doing is it's creating a two-tier system in which city councils – that want to legalize, want to opt in under this amendment, would actually have to get approval first from the county. This amendment is nothing more than an attempt to kill the bill. I think that's evidenced by the fact that Senator McCoy did not, even after it was approved, the amendment was approved, vote for the final passage of the bill in committee. What the original bill did was allow cities and counties to opt out with a simple resolution or ordinance. That's local control. What this amendment does is it creates a two-tier system and basically creates a lot of bureaucracy to prohibit communities from allowing fireworks in their community.
We have just a few more minutes. I want to get one more voice in here before we end this half hour talking about whether Iowa should permit the retail sale of consumer fireworks, Roman candles, bottle rockets, firecrackers. We've heard the arguments here in terms of safety and nuisance here. Bob Krause is with us as well, president of the Veterans National Recovery Center. Bob, we don't have much time, but give us a quick summary of why you oppose this bill, right?
Absolutely. Since the 9/11 event, we've had about 5,000 veterans in Iowa that have post-traumatic stress disorder. The specific one that is often affected by this is what we call severe startle syndrome. It's usually caused by being in an ambush. It's caused by bombs going around you. People will do strange things when they're put on autopilot by their amygdala. The amygdala is the part of the brain that governs fight or flight. When it's damaged from post-traumatic stress disorder and you have an explosion close to you or a bottle rocket going off that sounds like a mortar, you've got a problem because you've got somebody that may have been in remission from their post-traumatic stress disorder and all of a sudden you've reignited it and it can be with them for years. The sponsors of this legislation have talked about the economic development activity that occurs, and they say it's a $1.5 million economic development boost for Iowa. A, that's not very much, but B, that doesn't count all the extra medical costs, both to veterans, their families, and people that are hurt by fireworks. I think this is a terrible bill. I hope it's voted down.
Senator Chapman, we don't have much time, but please answer those concerns there.
Well, first of all, as a son and son-in-law of military vets, there's a place dear in my heart for our vets. And I think there's a place dear in the heart for vets across this state and across this nation. We commend what they have done in sacrificing for our nation. I had the opportunity to speak with a gentleman the other day, an Iraqi war vet who struggles with PTSD. And he said it very eloquent to me. He said, you know, Jake, he said, I have fought for freedom and liberty. And if Americans want to display their patriotism through shooting off fireworks, I'd like to join in in that celebration. And so there are vets, you know, that that struggle with PTSD who still want to see fireworks. And again, there's a place near my heart for our vets, and I can appreciate what Bob is saying here.
Senator, we're just about out of time. I'm just wondering if Senator McCoy's amendment really is a killer amendment. Why wouldn't you take that as better than nothing?
Well, it does move the bill forward, and we're going to be able to have the debate on the floor whether or not that's good public policy or not, whether an opt-in versus an opt-out is good policy, and whether or not it's true local control, having city councils going to counties to get approval. That will be a debate for the floor, and that will be up to the legislators to decide whether or not that's good policy.
And Mr. Krause, did you have something further to say?
I think it's like kicking a guy in a wheelchair. I think that if you have something like this, you know, like McCoy said, you have a neighbor next door, he's got a beer party, some guys have fun, they throw off a few M80s. You can't hide from that in your house. You can't hide from that. It's unexpected 365 days a year. It will cause quick reactions. Mm-hmm. Some of you that may remember there was a an incident down in Texas where a retired sniper, a veteran sniper, took a fellow with post-traumatic stress disorder to the rifle range. The soldier fired his weapon. The other soldier or the other veteran turned and fired in a reflex action. That's post-traumatic stress disorder. Bad things can happen. Thank you. Mm.
Okay. Quickly, maybe Asher Heimerman, quickly here, Superintendent of Wisconsin Public Safety. What would you have Iowa do just in the interest of after having observed Wisconsin and other states with fireworks?
Yeah, here in Wisconsin, fireworks enforcement responsibility and authority in the state of Wisconsin is really left up to local law enforcement. Besides the limitations the state imposes, local ordinances, you know, by city, town, village may be stricter than state law. I would just advise Iowa to look at what Wisconsin has done. I mean, in the city of Milwaukee, any fireworks that create smoke bangs are illegal, and some cities require permits in order to set off certain types of fireworks. And on our website at wisconsinpublicsafety.com/fireworks, we list are the ordinances and even the sparklers, how hot they can get. Yeah. And sparklers are even hotter than a stove.
Okay.
That's my concern.
Asher Heimerman, thank you much for joining us. Also, Nathan Irvin and Senator Jake Chapman and Bob Krause, thank you all for joining us in this discussion. To end with an email from one of our listeners, Bud from Long Grove says, "Every 4th of July, I have to soak my roof and stand guard with hoses because my drunk neighbors are setting off dangerous aerial fireworks. No thanks," says Bud. Our conversation, the debate continues on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joyce and I will be back in just a moment. And when we come back, we'll talk about another bill aimed at expanding voting rights for Iowa's youngest voting bloc. It recently cleared a Senate subcommittee. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Legislative Monday. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On Mondays during the legislative session at our state capitol, we like to discuss what issues and bills our lawmakers are dealing with. I'm here along with Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell. In the first half hour, we talked about proposed changes to Iowa's fireworks laws. Now let's talk about a proposed change to Iowa's voter registration law to include voters in the primary who would be 18 years old by Election Day. Joining us to talk about that, Senator Mike Gronstahl, a Democrat and also Senate Majority Leader. Senator Gronstahl, great to have you back on the program.
Good to be here.
Explain what the present law is and what you want to change through this bill.
Well, present law allows you, if you're going to be 18 on Election Day, to register for the general election in November, to register before that, even though you're not 18 yet. I had a student, Madison Haas, from the Harlan High School. She's a junior there, and she, in fact, is 10 days after the primary, I believe, going to be 18. But she doesn't have any, so she can register at at 17 and a half, and she can vote in the November election, but she has no say in the primary as to who the nominee will be. She emailed me, and I think her local legislators didn't express much interest in the issue, and I thought about it. We actually, the Iowa Democratic Party, allows people to participate in the caucuses if they're going to be 18 on the November election date. So that's what this bill does, says if you're going to be 18 by election day, you can participate in the primary.
Hmm. Why do you suppose this hasn't been considered up to now or has it changed?
I don't know. A number of states around us, and again, this is not some idea that some 66-year-old guy made up. This is something he heard from somebody nearby Council Bluffs, from Harlan area, and I thought, well, heck, if she gets to vote in November, she should have some voice in who her nominee is going to be for whatever party of her choice.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Senator? You probably maybe didn't have anything to do with the law to let people register when they're 17. But what do you suppose was the point of that, to be able to register when you couldn't vote anyway?
Well, I think probably it was the timing. Many, many years ago, you had to register, I think, 10 days before the general election, but you'd be an eligible elector, so why not let them register early? I'm sure that's what motivated the original law, and I suspect nobody even really thought much about the primary at that time, but this student contacted me. Also, her teacher, John Murtaugh, from the Harlan High School, teaches government there, and he also contacted me about this subject. So this is an idea that came from citizens, and we get a fair number of those kinds of ideas that citizens mm-hmm. give to us.
I wonder.
I thought it was a good idea and said, heck, let's do it.
Is it also a good idea, especially in your view, as a Democrat, because when we look at the latest polls, the latest Gallup poll I'm looking at, the people between the ages of 18 and 29 are much more likely to align themselves with the Democratic Party. 54% of young adults call themselves Democrats compared to 36% of GOP young adults. That makes it easier to support as a Democrat too, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think that's the motivation, whether that's how it works out. I've generally always believed the more people that vote, you know, when I go door to door, I register people to vote, and I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans when they register.
So if it was, I give them that answer.
I'll register a Republican as easily as I'll register a Democrat.
So if that poll result was the exact opposite, you'd still be supporting this?
I still think it's good to have people participate in the political process. If it's a small group of people that make the decisions ultimately about who their elected representatives are, it's much harder to develop consensus. So I was kind of the perfect quintessential purple state. It's not very Republican. It's not very Democratic. It is just purple.
Well, we're going to hear from Senator Whitfer. And I'm sure that he may have a different, I shouldn't say I'm sure, he may have a different perspective on this, but as I'm hearing you talk about it, I'm thinking, I can see how it's kind of hard to tell a young person, no, I want to be involved in the process. No, you can't do that.
Yep, and like I say, this is a citizen contacted me about this, not a legal age citizen, but still a citizen contacted me about this issue and said, gee, shouldn't I be able to vote in the primary? Mm-hmm. 10 days away. And I don't get a vote in the primary, so I may be stuck with a candidate that isn't who I think would be the best. As a matter of fact, I think this particular young lady is a Republican, but who knows, because she isn't registered yet. So.
Now, I understand this particular bill cleared a Senate subcommittee recently. How much resistance or acceptance do you expect for this bill in the full Senate, in the House, by the governor?
Well, I can't imagine that people are going to say that somebody that's eligible to vote in November is not going to be allowed to vote in the primary. So like I say, this probably should have been thought of when they passed the original law allowing 17 and a half year olds to register to vote. But since it wasn't, let's fix it.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Mike Ronstall, our Senate Majority Leader. Thanks for the conversation.
Sure. Happy to be here.
In this portion of our Monday legislative River to River, we're talking about Senate File 2001, allowing Iowans who will have reached the age of legal age of 18 by November in a general election year to be able to vote in the June primary election while they're still 17. Joyce Russell with me, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent. Now we're joined by Senator Jack Whitfer, a Republican from Ankeny. We are all wondering now, of course, how you stand on this bill as described by Senator Gronstahl. Do you stand behind it, or do you have some concerns that will prevent you from voting for it?
No, Senator Gronstahl and I don't always agree on issues down at the Capitol, but this seemed like a common sense bill. And, you know, you'd think if it was such common sense, it would have been done years ago. But
exactly.
I think it's something that, you know, just hasn't been brought up. We're always focused on a ton of different issues down here. But I think this is a fine idea. We just got through a presidential caucus here in Iowa, and I chaired one of the campaigns, so I was on the road a lot. Seeing the events and talking to voters, and the number of young voters that are interested in the process was really shocking to me. There were a lot of high school kids that can't even vote that would go to these events, a lot of high school kids that could vote, and then a lot of college kids. And so I think anytime you can get young voters into the process and engaged, I think it's a good thing, and I will be supporting this bill.
Mm-hmm. Any consideration given to the fact that the young adults tend to be more Democrats than Republicans these days?
No, I mean, a couple things. One, it's our job as Republicans to convince them otherwise. But more so, this is just all this bill does is it relates to the primary. And so it's going to bring Republican young voters into the Republican primary and Democrats into the Democrat primary. So I don't see any concerns of voter fraud or stacking the ballot one way or the other. It's just going to bring those from each party to their respective primaries.
Mm-hmm. And don't you think that your fellow Republicans might look at those voting numbers and have some concerns? You say you're not concerned, but some of your fellow Republicans may look and say, okay, young people vote Democrat disproportionately.
Yeah, but in the primary, it doesn't matter. Once you get to the general election, they're going to be 18 anyway, and if they want to vote, they can vote. And so this doesn't do anything to affect a race between a Republican and a Democrat. It's just Democrats versus Democrats and Republicans versus Republicans. And so I haven't heard any concerns from my colleagues. There may be some, but I'm personally comfortable with it.
Senator Whitfer, you then expect your colleagues in the Senate, your Republican colleagues also in the House will see it as you do, and this will be clear sailing for this revision of the
I certainly don't want to talk for everyone in my caucus, let alone the entire Capitol, because funny things happen with bills. But
You have a sense of it. You talk with your colleagues, what is the sense?
Being on the subcommittee, I am the one that kind of leads our caucus on this issue and tries to inform the other members of our Republican caucus what the bill does and the advantages and disadvantages of it. I will certainly speak well of the bill and try to promote the bill.
Senator Whitfer, we heard Senator Gronstahl talk about a specific constituent or he's not a voter yet, so you still call him constituent, citizen.
I do,
A specific young person with this request. Have you heard from young constituents on this?
I have not heard on this particular issue, but I think it's a good testimony to how the legislative process works. You know, everyone thinks that we just sit around at night thinking up bills, but that's not the case. It often comes from constituents, and if it's a high school student that had this idea, I think, you know, that's great. That shows the legislative process is working, or at least to this point. It still has to obviously pass and get signed by the governor, but that's the way the legislative process works, and I think that's a good thing.
Senator Whitfer and Joyce, we have a caller who would like to chime in on this topic. Suzanne is with us from Grinnell. Running out of time a little bit here, Suzanne, but tell us, how do you see this?
Oh, I would love to see 17-year-olds be able to vote, period, in the general elections, because I think you could actually practice civic engagement through civics classes in high school, and you could train them on how to be a responsible voter, and that you could have registration right there and everybody would get registered and you could really make it quite a good thing.
Okay, there's an interesting perspective. I don't know how much support that would have, not being considered legally an adult but still voting. Any view from you, Senator Whitfer?
Yeah, I would say let's take a baby step on this bill before we go any further. And yeah, I'm comfortable with 18 being the voting age.
Okay. Very good. Nevertheless, thank you, Suzanne, in Grinnell for that input. And unless you had anything else, Joyce, I think we can say goodbye to Senator Whitfer. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Senator Jack Whitaker is a Republican from Ankeny. He's also the Republican whip in the Senate, which I didn't mention in the outset. And this is our Legislative Monday. Joyce Russell with me as we pick over some of the things that the lawmakers are working with, the issues that they're dealing with. We're with Chris Larimer now. He joins us by phone, professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ben.
So tell us, we had a pretty good appraisal from the Republican there, introduced by the Democrat. What's the likelihood of something like this passing?
Well, from the responses from the two senators, it sounds like it is likely to get passed. I think there's still a question about whether or not this would overwhelmingly benefit the Democratic Party, and certainly Senator Whitaker is correct, right? This is just for a primary, so the between-party effects would be washed out. But I think at a broader level, you know, it certainly adds some consistency to the process, right? If these are folks who could participate in the caucuses, why do they have to sit out the primary but then can participate in the general election? So I think allowing for primary voting makes sense. But more generally, what we know from research is that voting is a behavior that's habitual. If you do it once, you're more likely to do it again. And so if you can get young people involved, the earlier you can do that, the more likely you are to get them to vote in subsequent elections. So if perhaps they participate in a primary election, then they maybe are more likely to participate in a general election.
Let's listen to Mark in Des Moines. Mark called 1-866-780-9100. Mark, you've been listening to this conversation. What concern or comment do you have?
Yes. Well, I agree with the last person who spoke, and I just think it's – well, plus, currently, I'm so burned out on politics and phone calls. And
I hear you there, Mark.
Yeah, and I think it's true. You know, you reach out to someone, get their email, get their address, get, you know, everything, and it's just part of the whole way that everyone does business. And it's like you don't even want to enter a free contest because you know the reason they're offering this contest is all they want is your vital statistics. And so I'm a cynic, unfortunately.
Okay. Good, Mark. Thank you. Thank you very much for your skepticism there. We know better than other folks in the country here in Iowa how our information is used for political. But nevertheless, right, Joyce, we want to have civically engaged young people grow up to be older people who remain civically engaged, right?
Yeah, and I'm kind of questioning Senator Whitaker's view that he seemed to be downplaying the fact that young voters do vote more Democrat than Republican. And he made a very good point, and we're only talking about primary elections here. And yet, it seems to me that it'll be interesting to see what other Republicans have to say about this bill, because it seems to me you are getting a young person more involved. And if a young person is more likely to vote Democratic, then I can see Republicans making that argument, even though it is just expanding it to a primary election.
Hey, Chris Larimer, do you think this is part of it that just is not being addressed? A little elephant in the room, if anything, but the Republicans have decided, or this Republican that we spoke with has decided, you really just can't be against something that expands voting in this way.
Well, I think there's still a question about the extent to which, if we want to group them as millennials or young people, the direction with which they lean. I think that you can probably generally say they lean Democratic, but I pulled some numbers from the Iowa Secretary of State's website for the November 2014 election, and if you just look at the age group they have for 18 to 24-year-olds, 23% of them identify as Democrat, 23% Republican, over 52% identify as no party. And that's a trend that we've seen in several surveys where younger people are less likely to identify with one of the two major parties, whereas older populations more likely to identify with one of the two major parties. And those younger voters are typically less confident in the political system, and a number of Pew polls have showed this, but those younger voters are also, I think, looking for a little bit of optimism, right? Older voters we've seen this cycle have tended to say that experience is more important when it comes to voting for a candidate for president, whereas younger voters are less likely to say something like that. And so you see younger voters gravitating to someone like a Bernie Sanders, but they're also gravitating to someone like a Marco Rubio. So I don't know that it's entirely clear that this would overwhelmingly benefit the Democratic Party down the road. I think I'm not sure we have the answers on that just yet.
Do we know, Chris, or perhaps Joyce knows this, but Chris, I'll ask you first here. Do we know how we would match up with other states? Would we be an anomaly when compared with other states in allowing 17-year-olds to vote in primaries in some cases?
I don't know that we – actually, some of that data was hard to find. I was looking through the National Conference of State Legislatures. But we are one of a handful of states. There are 11 states that allow for pre-registration for younger voters who are even younger than 17 and a half years, as we are in Iowa. Iowa is one of four states that allows it at 17 and a half. So I don't know that we're probably not an anomaly. As Senator Gronstall said, a number of other states do it. I don't know the exact number. But I think we fit with several states that are allowing for at least a little bit more early involvement in the political process.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we're finished up on that issue, we have a little bit of time left. I'd like to, Joyce and Chris, talk about something else. This is Senate Joint Resolution 2002. For a constitutional amendment that would make it so that a petition with a certain amount of signatures would be seen by Iowa's legislature and voted up or down, Joyce?
This is a proposed constitutional amendment to allow that to happen. The state's electors could come forward with a proposition. They would then take that to a vote of the people, and if it passed the vote of the people, then the legislature would be required to act on it. This is from Senator Mark Shelgren. Shelgren is a Tea Party Republican, likes to think outside the box, likes to challenge the status quo. So that's what's going on with that.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me, perhaps not, Chris, is this something like we hear often from California and state legislature?
A little bit. You know, it's part of that direct democracy framework, but it's a little bit different because in several other states they do have direct democracy where you can have an initiative where if citizens get so many signatures, get some through petition, they can get it on the ballot to be voted up or down for law, or an indirect initiative where it would actually go through the legislature, but it would first go to the legislature and then go to the voters. In this case, you know, they're getting a certain number of signatures, 100,000 signatures, and then it's going to the legislature to vote up or down. So it's not quite full direct democracy, but it's certainly a step in that direction. But I still think as a constitutional amendment, we have to remember how hard it is to get
right.
constitutional amendments done in Iowa, right? The one way is just once every 10 years to vote on a constitutional convention for every 10 years that end in zero, or they can have it approved by the House, and the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate by a majority in both houses. Then there has to be an intervening election. Then it would again have to be approved by the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate, and then it would go to a vote to the people. So that's a very drawn-out process. So either way, that's an incredibly long process to amend the Constitution. So I think you have to start there with any discussion.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a sense, either of you have a sense of how this is playing in the legislature at this point, if it's a partisan issue at all? Well, you mentioned the Tea Party bringing it up, but if it's likely to be something that will have – a great deal of support?
I haven't heard any interest in it. This is a resolution offered by a Republican legislator in the Democratic-controlled Senate. So I think it would be a heavy lift.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if any causes or changes in our laws have been attached to this, if the person introducing this would already has a petition in mind that he would like to see signatures on and then go through the process like this.
Well, he's been serving in the minority for quite a while, so he probably has a number of things that he would like to force the legislature to mm-hmm. to take up.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you see this just sort of bogging down the legislature? I mean, we have a lot of bills, legislation that the legislature often has trouble getting through in any given year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think given the nature with which the process is laid out for amending the Iowa Constitution, I'd be surprised if this would continue to go through. I mean, I think in general these are attempts to sort of expedite the lawmaking process by allowing for another way to get something done. But given the way the amendment process works in Iowa, I'd be surprised if this becomes kind of a focal point.
Okay, thank you very much. We've run out of time for this hour. Chris Lehrman, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Chris, thanks for joining Joyce and I.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Joyce, I guess we'll talk next week. Another Legislative Monday. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
And River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. And we had technical support from John Pemble. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, I have a special program, not a River to River, a special program looking at the water situation in Flint, Michigan, that's been in the news, of a full hour dedicated to that. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.